The second case scheduled for appeal argument this morning is case number 30754, State of South Dakota versus Christian Clifford. Kylie Beck is present, will be arguing on behalf of Mr. Clifford, and Angela Schutt will be arguing on behalf of the state. So, Ms. Beck, you may proceed with your argument. And I understand you're filling in for Mr. Karsten this morning because he's got a baby on the way?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
May it please the court. Counsel. Good morning. My name is Kylie Beck of the Minnehaha County Public Defender's Office, here on behalf of my client, Christian Clifford. We are asking this court to reverse the trial court's decision and remand this case for a new trial. We are seeking this relief because the trial court erred when it allowed in testimonial hearsay statements contained within a BOLO in violation of Clifford's Sixth Amendment right to confrontation. Now, typically evidentiary rulings are reviewed on an abuse of discretion standard. But in this matter, the violation of Clifford's federal constitutional right must be reviewed de novo. Under the Chapman Doctrine, which is applicable here, whether or not an error is harmless must be determined beyond a reasonable doubt, which is impossible to do so here, given the facts of this case and the effect of the error, and is prejudicial when in all probability it produced some effect on the final result.
Well, there were two eyewitnesses who testified about the driver's identity. Can you address that regarding the question of prejudice?
Yes. So there were two law enforcement officers who spoke that they were able to personally identify Mr. Clifford as the driver. What's important to know is that they were on to Mr. Clifford based upon this information from the BOLO. At that point in time, they were seeking this individual. Their mind was closed off to looking at who else it could possibly be. Furthermore, these statements that the officers elicited through their testimony indicate that they saw this vehicle in passing. At no point did it appear that either of them saw him for more than a maximum of a few seconds in passing, driving past them. One officer says he saw him looking in the rearview mirror. These statements are not clear. They did not make contact with him and face him face to face. They did not arrest him that day. Rather, their information was based upon the identity given through this BOLO, who they then looked a photo of, thought that this driver similarly looked like the person in the photographs.
So in addition to the testimony, there's also the three videos.
There is. Within those videos, it's clear that there was some obstruction to the view of the law enforcement officers, as well as shows just how quickly the vehicle and its driver passed by these officers, suggesting that the amount of time that these officers would have had to view this driver was extremely small. And in having such a small amount of time, thinking that this might look like the person they saw a picture of, and not keeping their minds open to the idea that it could be another individual who might also have the same general descriptors. Important to note, the registered owner of the vehicle was not Mr. Clifford. Rather, officers testified that it was a Hispanic male, and Mr. Clifford is a Native American male. We were not given any other descriptors, like what this individual was wearing, or anything of that sort. So as it relates to prejudice, the credibility of the law enforcement's ability to view this driver is in question. But because these statements came in through the BOLO, it pushes the amount of prejudice over the top to the point in which Mr. Clifford was prejudiced.
What makes them testimonial under Crawford in the cases that have sought to articulate a test or standard for testimonial statements?
Yes, Justice Salter. This court, through its line of cases, specifically South Dakota versus Podziemek, it cites to a Supreme Court case, specifically Hammond v. Indiana, where that court specifically concluded that a victim's statement made to an officer who had responded to a domestic disturbance call were testimonial because there was no emergency in progress and the interrogation was to investigate a possible crime. That is nearly identical to what happened here. The only difference is that the caller was not the victim. The caller was a reporting party, which further separates them from any concern of an ongoing crime. This court, further through South Dakota v. Carter, explains that the surrounding circumstances need to be considered as to whether or not they would lead an objective witness to reasonably believe that the statement would be available for use at a later trial.
So what do we know from the record about what is actually happening when the caller made the statements to law enforcement? What can be gleaned from the record?
So through the record, the information is that it was a BOLO. As it relates to any 911 call, the information is extremely limited insofar as that they were dispatched for a call for service for a family dispute. The record
we don't know who made the call to law enforcement.
The record is vague. It's someone named Miss Hall. We don't know if it's Lindsay Hall or Anna Hall. It's just vague as Miss Hall.
But if the test for testimonial evidence, and I understand your reliance upon our decisions, which in turn rely upon the Supreme Court's decisions, but in this determination about, you know, trying to figure out whether we have a testimonial statement here, it's a really fact-bound, particularized examination. At least it seems like it is. What facts, as Justice Kern notes, do we have that would assist us in conducting that sort of really detailed factual determination in order to determine whether they were made under circumstances under which someone might reasonably think, yeah, it's going to be used in court later?
I think one of the big differences from what is typically considered to be non-testimonial versus testimonial is how it's made to the official, such as law enforcement. Typically calls to 911 themselves are deemed to be non-testimonial, whereas those within a police interrogation or questioning by law enforcement tend to be deemed testimonial.
And do we know that happened here? That sort of interrogation, that sort of getting information from a caller?
Yes. The law enforcement officers testified that they had stopped out with the reporting party. So this was conversation that they had with the reporting party where they gathered and created this BOLO, and then the information within the BOLO was taken and subsequently used.
The BOLO was not an exact representation of the statements that the police officers obtained.
Generally, no, but in this case, it did include the specific statements of Mr. Clifford being last seen driving a red Toyota Camry. It was not just a general, you know, white male last seen on this street. It was the specific statements that this is the person and they were driving this vehicle. Now, beyond it being testimonial, these statements are inadmissible hearsay. This goes to the issue of not just what was elicited, but how it was elicited. When the court allowed law enforcement to testify that Clifford was the driver of the vehicle, the court effectively introduced a fourth unsworn witness to the jury without requiring them to be present to testify, to be under oath, or subject to cross-examination. Now, Clifford sought to exclude these statements from coming in through law enforcement, arguing that it was testimonial hearsay. The state argued that they were not intending to elicit hearsay. Rather, they were offering these statements for the effect on the listener, not for the truth. And this is why it's important what was contained within that BOLO. The court's analysis, when it denied Clifford's motion, though it was convoluted, seemed to recognize that the statements in question from the BOLO, that being that Christian was driving a red Toyota Camry, was testimonial and admissible hearsay, and that law enforcement could not testify to this as hearsay, although the court ultimately did deny Clifford's motion.
So the statement that's alleged to violate Crawford isn't the 911 determination or anything like that. It's the BOLO itself.
It's the statements contained within the BOLO by the reporting party.
Right, the BOLO. And the BOLO is generated by the police officers. They're essentially the declarants. And you may think that's hearsay within hearsay, but that's accurate, is it not?
I would say it'd be akin to like a police report.
So what's the purpose of the BOLO? Should we be examining that more so than the initial calls to 911? What if the police officers generated the BOLO, then maybe from a confrontation standpoint, in order to determine whether something's testimonial or not, we have to look at whether this statement is testimonial, not what it's based on. What was this intended to accomplish? And was it made under those conditions that would reasonably suggest that someone, you know, would expect it to be used in court? Or were they just saying, be on the lookout for this guy.
The purpose of the BOLO was created based on a conversation with the reporting party that Mr. Clifford was alleged to have been involved in a domestic dispute. He was never charged with anything related to a domestic dispute. So I think that is important to note, too, that there nothing ever came of what ultimately brought this BOLO to law enforcement's attention. So I think it goes beyond just that.
What were the exact words used? Was it domestic dispute, family dispute?
There was a pretrial motion to have it be called a family dispute. Now, as I mentioned, it goes beyond just what was said, but rather how it was said. In this matter, the prosecutor did not simply elicit these statements for their effect on the listener. Argued the contents as substantive, circumstantial evidence to the jury in closing. Further urged the jury to rely on these out-of-court, unsworn assertions to determine the identity, which was the main contention in this case.
So that happened in the rebuttal argument, is that correct?
It happened in both the initial argument as well as the rebuttal.
And was there an objection by the defense?
Defense did object prior to the start of trial through their motion in limine to keep this testimony out, therefore preserving their argument to object to this coming in as hearsay.
There wasn't a contemporaneous objection in the first closing argument or in the rebuttal argument?
My recollection is that there was a continuing ongoing objection raised by defense that was noted by the court.
There's one sentence regarding in the pretrial proceedings regarding we have an ongoing objection under Crawford, but there was no contemporaneous objection other than that.
No.
Thank you.
With this being inadmissible hearsay, the considerations as to what the prejudice is of that hearsay is important. With allowing the hearsay testimony to come in at trial and therefore allowing the state to intentionally elicit those hearsay statements as substantive evidence undermines the purpose of trial as well as the reason we have our adversarial system here. The hearsay statements that Clifford being reported to have been driving a specific vehicle not only invaded the minds of the jury but the minds of the officers. Through confirmation bias, they viewed a picture, unknown how long that picture was taken ago, as well as what was depicted in that picture, how accurate that picture was, and then them seeing an individual driving a moving vehicle that's reported to have been traveling at 60 miles an hour, taking those statements and compiling it with the statement of a reporting party who was not called to testify, allowing the officers to testify to the truth of what was being said in the BOLO from this reporting party, that it was Clifford in the red Toyota Camry, was very prejudicial and unfairly weighed in favor of the state. The heart of the issue presented to the jury was the question of who was driving the red Toyota Camry, and these prejudicial statements ultimately weighed against Mr. Clifford. Now, as mentioned, the Confrontation Clause is applicable here, which increases the burden of review here to be beyond a reasonable doubt as to whether or not the error was harmless. Clifford was stripped of his right to cross-examine a witness under oath, to question their accountability, and barred his ability to challenge, to scrutinize, or impeach the claims of this non-testifying reporting party. He had no opportunity to confront this third party on the veracity of their claim to law enforcement that he was the driver of the vehicle. He had no ability to challenge those accusations, expose any bias, or reveal any motive that may exist by this reporting party. It's impossible to know if the statements relied upon in the BOLO were honest, reliable, or complete, and there was no way to confront the individual who provided this information to law enforcement. Further, there's nothing in the record that suggests that the state attempted to call this third party to trial, which would have been the easy solution here. Call this individual, allow them to face cross-examination by the defense as to the validity of their statements. So what we're left with is if these statements were kept out, what would have happened at trial? We assert that the verdict would have been different because the issue of identity would have been one that the jury would have had very little information or evidence to support, where they would be able to consider the veracity and validity of law enforcement statements that they were able to identify this individual based on a quick passing through a vehicle window traveling at a high rate of speed of someone that they have never met themselves. So for these reasons, we are asking this court to reverse the trial court's decision and remand this down for a new trial.
Thank you. Should I proceed with your argument?
May it please the court, counsel. The Confrontation Clause guarantees criminal defendants the right to confront the witnesses against them, but it only applies to statements that are testimonial in nature and statements that are hearsay, those that are offered to prove the truth of the matter asserted. The statements challenged by Mr. Clifford in this case, that there was a bolo and that Clifford was driving a red Toyota Camry, were neither testimonial nor hearsay, and therefore their admission at trial did not violate Clifford's right to confrontation. The U.S. Supreme Court...
We even one step removed from that, because testimonial, at least when I mean, the cases typically involve testimonial as it relates to evidence in this case. If the connection that Mr. Clifford argues to testimonial relates to a domestic dispute or family dispute or something like that, that's not this case. And so... do we have to look at what type of evidence was even being purportedly elicited and whether it relates to this case? Does that make sense?
Yes, Your Honor. And, you know, the Supreme Court has held that statements that are made during calls to 911 or calls for service are considered non-testimonial if they're made to address an ongoing emergency.
In other words, nothing other than the identity. There's no other evidence contained in this bolo that was ever used against him.
Correct, Your Honor, because the information regarding any of his actions with the alleged domestic dispute that happened earlier that day, that was not brought out in the trial. That was actually excluded by the circuit court. The only thing that the circuit court allowed the officers for the state, the witnesses for the state to testify to was, one, that there was a bolo. They weren't allowed to testify as to any of the basis for that bolo, and two, that there was this association with a red Toyota Camry. And the statements that information that was provided to law enforcement was made during a call for service where the reporting party was seeking law enforcement action and locating Mr. Clifford. We don't have the call that was made as part of the settled record. And like I said, the officers were prohibited from testifying at trial as to what the specifics of that call were. But when arguing the motion limine, counsel for both state and defense kind of established what led to that bolo. There was this alleged domestic assault that happened earlier that day. It's unclear from the record the length of time between when that assault occurred and when the officers responded to this location. But there was some indication from the officers that the information was provided to them closer to the time that they made the response. In particular, Officer O'Brien testified he responded because there was a report that Clifford had returned to this location where the assault had occurred earlier that day. And so the information that the officers received in that call, it was describing current events in order to assist them in locating Clifford, not what had happened in the alleged domestic assault. And that was kind of the difference that the Supreme Court found in the two cases that they analyzed together, Davis versus Washington and Hammond versus Indiana, and that Davis, statements in a 911 call were allowed in as non-testimonial. They happened as the assault was happening. The victim in that case identified the assailant as the assault was occurring. And in Hammond, in contrast, the statements that the victim made that were ultimately contained in an affidavit that was offered at trial happened after the assault had occurred, the parties were separated, and law enforcement was speaking to the separate parties. So even if there was no emergency to the victim of the alleged domestic assault, the fact that the officers testified that they had gone to this location to find Mr. Clifford still doesn't change whether this was an emergency or exigent circumstance. Detective Lee Kraft testified he works in the Violent Crimes Unit. He was familiar with Clifford through his prior work. His unit was aware of him. They knew who he was. And even though this information didn't come out to the jury, another basis for the BOLO was that Clifford was a parole absconder at the time as well. So all of these circumstances support the exigent nature of the law enforcement response and the non-testimonial nature of that information that they provided. They were provided. In addition, the statements were not offered to prove the truth of the matter asserted, but were offered to show why law enforcement responded to the area and why they attempted to stop this particular vehicle.
I'd like to turn your attention to the rebuttal argument. The state reminded the jury to, quote, remember the circumstantial and direct evidence. Direct evidence in this case is the videos and the testimony from the officers, the eyewitnesses that were there. The circumstantial evidence would be that the red Toyota Camry is associated with Christian Clifford based on the BOLO that you heard testimony to and from the officers. That sounds like circumstantial evidence of identity.
Yes, Your Honor. And as you indicated, that statement was made in the rebuttal argument. In the original closing argument, the state summarized the direct evidence of identification, which was the officer's visual identification of the driver, where they were located on the street and in the alleys in location or in relation to the vehicle as it was driving past, their unobstructed view. They both said they had unobstructed views of the driver. It was in the middle of the day. It wasn't nighttime where it was dark, and the dash cam videos that the jury had the opportunity to view. And Clifford's closing argument, he questioned the identification by the officers. He questioned their credibility. He said they only saw what they wanted to see because they were told, this is our guy. They were already looking for him. They believed he was in this vehicle, so they didn't even do anything other than just view him for 10 seconds or less as he drove past. So in the rebuttal argument, you know, the state then, again, it did refer to the direct evidence, and when it said the circumstantial evidence, it made the statement in response to Clifford's attack on the officer's credibility. The state could have been a little bit more careful in its wording or characterization of
they were using statements. They were using it for its truth. Yes?
I believe in that characterization, it indicates that it was being used for the truth. However, the state did end its closing argument. This is what the case comes down to, the identification of the officers in the videos that you saw. Again, referring them only to the direct evidence. And as Justice Kern indicated, Clifford did not object to the statement during the closing argument, although he had a...
That wouldn't make it any more or less offered for its truth, would it?
I think he would have needed to object at that point to indicate to the court that the state is indicating that this is direct evidence or, well, circumstantial evidence.
Yeah, but I mean, that goes to admissibility or whether he should have said it. We're analyzing Confrontation Clause issue, though, here. We're not really reviewing whether he should have said it or shouldn't say it. The state's going to use it however the state wants to use it, and I guess it looks like in the reply argument they decided to use it for its truth.
Well, and Your Honor, the jury was properly instructed that closing arguments are not evidence. They're a summarization of the evidence, and the jury is presumed to follow that.
But that argument certainly shows the state's intent as to why they offered it. They believed that that's what it was going to, was that circumstantial evidence, right?
I don't believe that they did, because...
Irrespective of whether that statement is evidence, it shows why the state believed that information was submitted and why it was relevant, what it was relevant
to.
Well,
I think that goes in contrast, though, to their argument that we're not offering this for the truth of the matter asserted, that it's offered to show context, which is what they argued in response to the defendant's motion.
I understand that was their argument, but maybe closing revealed what the double purpose was.
I believe that it was a wrongful characterization of that evidence.
Let me ask you this. If the state did use it for its truth, can you still win?
Yes, because there's independent evidence of the identification of the driver by two of the officers.
So that's prejudice. Could you still win on a Sixth Amendment analysis? Because you still have to have, it still has to be testimonial or not testimonial, right?
Correct.
Okay. So can you still win? Or do you just have to go to prejudice in your view?
I think you just go to prejudice. If the court determines that that statement was offered, it constituted hearsay and therefore constitutes a Sixth Amendment violation, then the state would have to look at the harmless error.
Well, don't you have to find it's testimonial and hearsay or non-hearsay?
But so, you still have an error if it's admitted as if it's inadmissible hearsay. You still have error, and that may go to prejudice.
Yes, Your Honor.
Different analysis than harmless error on the confrontation issue.
Yes.
But you're still arguing this is non-testimonial, aren't you?
Yes, Your Honor, I'm arguing.
We don't have a hearsay evidentiary issue here. We have a confrontation clause issue. So whether it was hearsay or non-hearsay as a matter of evidence law is one thing. We would not have to worry about whether it's testimonial if it's non-hearsay. If it is hearsay, whether it's accepted or not accepted, there was no objection, we're not reviewing that. We still have to go ahead and think about, under Crawford, is it testimonial?
Correct, Your Honor.
Are there enough facts in the record to determine whether or not it's testimonial or non-testimonial?
Your Honor, I believe that the record is kind of scant on that because we don't have the 911 call or the call for service, and we don't have that information. It came in basically through arguments of counsel that this is the reason why the BOLO was issued. And the circuit court did kind of limit the amount of testimony that the state's witnesses could give as to why there was a BOLO and why they were looking for that particular vehicle.
Do you disagree with the defense counsel's statement that this was that some of the information in the BOLO was a result of questioning by the officers of the reporting witnesses?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that question, Your Honor?
Well, I think I heard defense counsel say some of the information in the BOLO came about as a result of questioning from the officers of the reporting witnesses.
Correct. Related to, yes, I mean, the information that he was driving a red Toyota Camry came from the reporting witness.
Right, who the officers were questioning at the time. You don't disagree with that?
I don't disagree with that. But I think the important thing, you know, that this is a different case than if the officers had not made that identification of the driver as it went past them, and the state was basing its charges, which are all driving related. The main issue in the case was who was driving the vehicle, and if they based their the charges solely on the statement from the reporting party that he was driving a red.
That goes to harmlessness.
Yes, Your Honor. So it is the state's position that there was no violation of Clifford's Sixth Amendment confrontation rights, so the court should review the circuit court's decision in admitting the statements at issue under the abuse of discretion standard, and under that standard, the defendant must also prove that the admission resulted in prejudice. However, if the court determines that there is a violation of Clifford's Sixth Amendment confrontation rights, then he is entitled to a new trial unless the error was harmless. So when looking at whether an error is harmless, the U.S. Supreme Court has provided a list of factors, including the importance of the witness's testimony in the prosecution's case, whether the testimony was cumulative, the absence or presence or absence of evidence corroborating or contradicting the testimony of the witnesses, cross-examination otherwise permitted, and the overall strength of the prosecution's case. State believes that any error in admitting the statements at issue did not affect the outcome of the case. The testimony regarding the BOLO and Clifford's association with the red Toyota Camry merely provided the context for the officer's response. Testimony was minimal in that approximately 69 pages of the jury trial transcript containing the testimony for the state's case in chief. This was about 3 pages total. And as I indicated, he was charged with these driving-related offenses for his actions that occurred after the officers responded. There was a separate, independent, corroborating evidence placing him in the driver's seat of the vehicle. Two of the officers testified they were familiar with his appearance. They observed him in the driver's seat of the vehicle before the third officer attempted the stop and the vehicle took off. They also identified him in court during the trial. The jury was also properly instructed on weighing the witnesses' credibility and their testimony regarding identification. And the testimony showed both Officer Puente, who had a a side view of the vehicle. He was facing westbound in an intersection, and the vehicle was driving southbound. He had a view of the driver. The jury was able to see the dash cam video as the vehicle passed in front of him. It was traveling at a speed slow enough that they could infer that the officer had enough time to make that identification. Detective Leecraft testified he saw the driver coming towards him and was able to even see the driver look in his rearview mirror at the police car behind him. There was no violation of Clifford's confrontation rights, and admission of the statements at issue were either not prejudicial nor or were harmless. So the state respectfully requests that this court affirm. Thank you.
Ms. Beck, you may proceed with your rebuttal.
This court asked questions about the 911 call and in the considerations of this being testimonial or not. And the appellee here indicated that the 911 call was not admitted into evidence, was not allowed in. That's because the evidence that came in was not the 911 call. It was what was in the BOLO, which further supports that this was testimonial evidence.
How does it support that?
Sorry.
What about the BOLO was building a case against Mr. Clifford for driving offenses?
Well, one of the determinations when considering whether or not a statement is testimonial, it's not whether an objective person would anticipate the statement would be used later in trial for that something of that same nature, but rather trial in general. Case law does not state that it has to be specific to what the original call was for. It's the information that was contained within the BOLO. So the question is, would this witness or an objective person reviewing it consider that this person, when they're making those statements, would they believe that those statements would be used in a future trial?
The feature of a BOLO be on the lookout for is to prompt police officers to, of course, look for somebody. What about that bulletin suggest circumstances that would lead to an inference that it was created to build a case or be used in court for as substantive evidence of guilt versus just trying to find him?
Well, I would assert that it's not the fact that it's a BOLO, it's what's in the BOLO.
No, I agree with that.
So I think the fact that the BOLO itself isn't the issue, it's just what's within the BOLO.
Well, we know what the BOLO is, the purpose of it.
Correct. And so I think that the reason that the BOLO exists is not as important as what is contained within the BOLO. Those statements made by the reporting party who is speaking to officers after they reported for a crime that had been reported. There's no allegations here that the crime was ongoing or that there was an emergency taking place, further supporting that this would be testimonial. I would note, I believe Justice Curran had asked the appellee regarding the statements that were made within the rebuttal argument, whether or not those were being offered for the truth of the matter asserted. I would assert that this was not just presented through the rebuttal, but additionally in the state's initial closing, where they had stated that the officers knew who they were looking for, a one Christian Clifford. They were given the description of the vehicle that he was driving. That was being offered for the truth of the matter, that Christian Clifford was inside of the vehicle that was described. Although in their initial, they don't state what the vehicle is. Throughout trial, it's been explained as this red Toyota Camry is the vehicle that Christian Clifford was in, which is information that came only from the reporting party to law enforcement.
How does the state neutralize the Sixth Amendment error here then? Do they have to call the 911 callers, the folks who phoned in? Do they have to call the person who created the BOLO? What do they do?
They call the reporting party who made the statement to law enforcement.
Okay.
If they would have done that, this issue would not have arisen.
Okay.
There's nothing in the record suggesting that the state tried to subpoena this third party who law enforcement spoke to. As indicated, that would have likely resolved any issues as it relates to the confrontation clause. There was further no indication that she was unavailable to testify for trial. Law enforcement testified about their ability to view the driver. Again, it was in passing. Compared it to a photograph from an unknown amount of time ago. And also importantly, that Mr. Clifford was not personally known to any of these law enforcement officers. None of them had ever met him. No testimony about characteristics of the driver or how they made the determination that this driver was a match beyond what they were provided in the BOLO connects it to Mr. Clifford. I am asking this court to reverse the trial court's decision and find that these statements that were elicited by the state are in violation of Mr. Clifford's Sixth Amendment right to confront and cross-examine the witnesses against him, find that they are testimonial and inadmissible hearsay, and remand this case for a new trial. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel, for your arguments this morning. We'll be in recess for about 10 minutes.